welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Hello, welcome to episode 196 of the Self-Help Podcast with me, Ed Lamb, and Sean Orford. How are you doing?
I'm doing very, very well. How are you doing?
Top notch. Very well indeed, yeah. Very well. Spring's on its way, sort of ish. Well, it did have it was a bit of a snowstorm on Sunday ish. The most snow we've had all winter, but it was too wet to stick. Got it.
There was one day when we went out, there was about 2 inches of snow on the car here. Quite a lot.
Cool.
Yeah.
Just on the car, though, not on the floor.
No, it was on the floor as well. Well, it was on the car, because when I was driving along, it was flying off.
Shooting off. Yeah, but spring's here, and you can feel a bit of warmth in the sun, can't you? Which helps.
It's lovely. We went for a walk, and I could feel the heat on my back, which is really nice.
It helps with all sorts of psychological things, doesn't it? We're talking about depression today.
Yeah, and sunlight, big thing with depression.
I think our very first episode of this podcast was about the benefits of sunlight.
Indeed it was. Me going on about vitamin D, which the GPs are finally dealing with now.
Oh, yes, we're so far ahead of the curve, aren't we?
We are. It's amazing.
It'll pay off one of these days.
Yeah.
Episode 200 coming up. We're talking about depression this week. There's a blog post to accompany this article that has been written already. I've had a little preview of it. A few typos, but it's all right. We'll make sure they're...
Yeah, I'm working on that. That's a work okay. in progress, that is. Yeah.
Classic. Yeah. Liveinthepresent.co.uk is our website. Check it out for all the show notes and links over there. All previous episodes are on there too. Not too bad, is it, Sean?
Yeah.
And don't forget to stick your email address in the box on the website, because we'll send you weekly podcast alerts and you can get some free meditation files as well.
Yep.
So what have you been up to?
Which are good. I've been away on a mindfulness course, which has been very good.
How far away?
Manchester.
Okay.
2 days away, which is very good. I'm going through this thing at the moment of becoming an officially accredited mindfulness teacher, which...
A mindfulness guru.
Yeah, it's kind of good fun to do it. And the lady that does it, anyone's thinking of doing anything like this, there's a lady, Geraldine Thomas, who runs something called Mindflow, which is based around the Northwest here.
Mm-hmm.
But she does amazing work. Does amazing work with kids and schools with mindfulness. And does lots of mindfulness training and courses and teaches yoga.
I'm sure we'll hear more about... We should get her on the show. We should get her on the show.
Yeah, I think we should.
Yeah, that'd be cool. So would you get more letters after your name once you've got this qualification?
No. It's something... There's been a kind of a movement around the world which comes from the whole kind of mindfulness body that starts with Jon Kabat-Zinn.
Yep.
And they're trying to create standards, so they're trying to create a training programme to go around it, which is okay. It's good. And it's good to be... I like being in a situation where I'm not having to run something. I'm a student on something, which is good fun.
Yeah.
Which is good. And I tend to sit back a bit and allow everybody to get on with it, which is good. But research means you need to participate more. Stop sitting back. So next time
sitting
we go...
Sitting back and watching.
I'll participate a bit more. Yeah. Mm. But no, it's good. It's a good course. Love it.
Cool. I'm good as well. I've had just busy with work. Have you had a cool little day out? Everton Football Club the other week. A pal of mine gets to put one of the perks of his job. He gets free tickets to the executive suites beforehand, and he took me along to it. So I haven't actually been to a game of football in a long time. Used to go and watch Tranmere play all the time, which is, you know, out of Tranmere, but not quite at the level of some of the established Premier League clubs. But it was quite cool to go to an old ground.
So you were in the executive suite.
We had a meal before the game in one of the suites. So food and there was drink at half time. But yeah, we were actually sat in the main stand. That's where the tickets were, in the thick of it there.
Wow.
It's cool. I haven't been to a game of football for a long time. And actually, it was only the second time I've ever been to a Premier League top flight game. So okay, it's quite a cool experience to be surrounded by that many people all pretty passionate about what's going on. And
it's quite
cool, really.
Yeah, well, you need to take me to a football match.
Next time I get a ticket, there's three spots, so I'll...
I'm a football virgin.
you'd love the people watching there. There's lots of people
watching going on there.
You'd be in your element. Right, should we talk about depression?
Yeah.
Because we're not coming at it from the usual angle. I think I do want to kind of go over at some point early on what depression is.
Yeah.
And what kind of differentiates it from just feeling a bit down in the dumps.
Yeah.
Which we'd all feel. But, yeah, what's your angle or what do you want to
The thing that got me into suggesting that we do this as a podcast was an article which I'm quoting from in the blog.
Yeah.
But it's what it suggests is that depression might actually be an evolutionary advantage that we developed as we went along. And it struck a note with me because my initial training in the Ayurvedic Eastern stuff was always the idea that we should greet depression with gratitude, because what it's doing is it's telling us that something is wrong and giving us the opportunity to get it right.
Okay.
So that, in a way, periods of depression or downness are like a rudder that's kind of nudging us to keep on track, you know, like a pilot steering a plane. A plane spends most of its time off target, and you have to keep correcting it in the wind to keep it going where it's supposed to go.
Sure.
And I've always liked that idea. And in the West, the attitude to depression is always to run away in horror and go, "Oh my God," and reach for the pills. But maybe there are other ways of doing it. Yeah.
Well, one of the articles I've just had a quick scan of before that I'll link to was talking about. Well, the quote I read was, "What would have happened." Hundreds of years ago, if there wasn't Prozac around, for example, when in Van Gogh's day, it was alluding to the fact that I'm sure it wasn't much fun for Van Gogh when he was in the deep despair of whatever he was going through. But what came out of it in terms of his artwork and his creativity and his legacy is pretty amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's kind of politely trying to say that there can be some upsides to it.
And we do see a lot of that relationship between depression and creativity. You know, whether it's musicians, like orchestral musicians or rock musicians or artists of different sorts, they go through their angst to get to that point.
Oh, yeah, think about opera or whatever, and yes, them girls wailing that, you know, crazy about whatever's horrendous situation in their lives. But, yeah, it's so powerful, isn't it?
Yeah.
But maybe, I don't know, is that sick of us to feed off that and to enjoy it?
It's the human condition, I guess, that we identify with. It's a bit like when you watch something and you resonate with it, and you get emotion, either happiness or sadness. You're tuning into it, aren't you?
How do you know if you've got depression then, or if you're starting to suffer? What are the warning signs? As opposed to, we all feel a bit down every now and again. Even me, even you, Sean. Hey,
yeah, everybody.
Yeah,
everybody. I told you about the interview with the Dalai Lama, and the guy saying to him, you know, "Well, Dalai Lama, do you ever get depressed?" And he said, "Well, yeah." "And do you ever get angry?" "Yeah." "Do you ever get sad?" "Yeah." And the guy's surprised. He said, "I'm a human being. That's what human beings do. It's the nature of things." And it's one of those things that the issue is, it's not what happens to you, it's how you respond to it, which is why I think that this idea of looking at some kinds of depression as positive is a really powerful way of looking at it. Yeah, and I suppose that's where we need to look at what are the different kinds of depression. You're saying, what is depression? What are the symptoms of depression? Generally, symptoms of depression are lack of energy, a lack of meaning in life, and a lack of willpower to make anything any different. So very often people in that depressive despair very often will withdraw to the house, a safe place, and then they withdraw to the bedroom, a safe place, and they might withdraw to the bed, a safe place, and pull the duvet up. And it's getting someone back out from that, back out into the world, is very often what you're doing therapeutically.
Yep.
But if you look at, okay, what kinds of depression are there? So the first one I would say is what I call attached depression. That is, people are attached to past events, people, situations, whatever. So they keep living in the past and ruminating on the past, which creates a depressive feeling.
Yep.
Yeah. There's reactive depression, which is one which is the most common, where people are reacting to events like a trauma, a death, a loss. There's some kind of cause that's kicked it.
Would that also include even kind of seasonal stuff, where people kind of ups and downs with the seasons and feeling?
Well, that comes into more into the clinical bit.
Okay.
So clinical depression is when, if you have something like your insulin is out of balance, so you're diabetic, say.
Yep.
You can be as positive as you like. And yes, you might be able to change your diet, but essentially you can't just think positively and change your diabetes. You might be able to affect it in some ways. You can affect the way you respond to it. And clinical depression is like that. The only option that you have is to take some kind of medication to balance your system.
Mm-hmm.
The other kind of depression that I get a lot is what I call repressed depression. It's when someone is actually feeling angry. And they're angry with someone that they can't share it with. It could be a boss or a teacher or a partner or whatever.
Yeah.
And what they're doing is that their anger is within them like a splinter, and it's creating pus, and the pus is the depression.
Eesh.
Yeah, which is quite horrible when you get people to express it. But what's been suggested in this article, and what was suggested to me in my Eastern training, was the idea of a kind of adaptive depression. In the sense of throughout evolution, things like anxiety was there to protect us so that we would have some sense of danger. Anxiety disorder is when it takes over.
Right.
Yeah. Depression would be adaptive in the same way, that telling us that something is wrong, we need to change something, we need to change our life. And that might mean that we develop bad habits or bad relationships, and we need to change them for things that serve us better.
Mm-hmm.
And that depressive effect makes us stop, because people lose the ability to get on with things. They have to stop and question the meaning of life. And that's when people change.
Okay.
Yeah, so people might end up saying things like, depression's the best thing that ever happened to me because it made me do...
Sure. Yeah. Well, the first article I'll link to is a Psych Central one, and yeah, 10 good things about depression, and it's written by a chap who went through. It's pretty serious bout of depression. I think it's something that he still kind of grapples with.
Yeah.
Is it something that ever really goes away once you've... Is it just...
I think that that concept of have we or haven't we is wrong. I think we've all got it. We've all got anxiety. We've all got depression. It's where are we on the spectrum? And we're going to move up and down those spectrums depending on what's happening around us. But that's not the point. The point is, what do we do?
Mm.
Yeah. So, I mean, mindfulness, which we bang on a lot about on this program.
Yep.
When you start using mindfulness for depression, it's actually called mindfulness-based cognitive therapy. And it is actually a recognised MBCT, as opposed to CBT, which is cognitive behavioural therapy. Yeah.
Yep.
It's using mindfulness to become the observer of these things that are going on inside us. It's, if you think of it in terms of, if you see the depression as the symptom, we need to get to the cause. The problem that we have in the West is I go to the GP with the symptom of depression, and they give me medication to deal with the symptom. They don't give me the therapy to deal with the cause.
Yeah, sure.
That's the problem.
So you're always going to come bouncing back to that.
Yeah.
That low point.
So people go round in cycles. Whereas
there might be some conspiracy theorists out there saying that it's all kind of some kind of ploy by drug companies to get folks hooked on.
Well, I'm sure that does exist in a marketing sense. I mean, do we want people? Do we want medications that maintain behaviours, or do we want medications that change behaviours? And from a financial point of view, it's better to have things that maintain.
Yep.
You know, I guess that might be involved in. There's a wonderful book up there which is about the pharmaceutical industry.
All right.
That, someone gave me, which looks at how, over the years, pharmaceutical companies have exploited medical issues.
Okay.
For money.
Yeah,
which is real.
There's one called Bad Science by Ben Goldacre, which I read a while ago.
Yeah.
That's pretty fascinating too.
I think that one's called Bad Pharmacology as well.
Right.
But I'll hook it out later. Yeah, the thing for me is, if you look at the stats, the stats that most easily available are American stats, and they're saying that at any one time, 5% of America is in a state of moderate to severe depression, right?
Mm-hmm.
Major depressive disorders are so common I'm reading this, that at some point in life, one in six Americans, that's 15%, will suffer from it, which is huge.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, it's estimated that out of all the depressions, only 20% of those could be seen as clinical or genetic. Yeah, the other 80% are either reactive or repressed or adaptive in some way, or due to some kind of some attachment to past stuff which is being ruminated on, hasn't been let go of.
Yeah.
And certainly when I do the mindfulness courses that I run in the hospitals, the issue about being able to let go, and we've been through this when we ran the 10 steps courses about forgiveness, foregoing, letting go, all that kind of stuff, is very, very difficult for many people to do. Once people get their head around it and they crack it, it is life transforming once they do it. But if you're holding a lot of negative stuff and you almost feel like you have a right to hold it, which is what people get attached
to. It's almost like a blanket you can go to and just cuddle up to.
But very often it can be the excuse, you know, my life is like it is because these things happen to me, as opposed to, no, your life is like it is because you keep going over the things that happen to you. It's now time to move on beyond those things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's the tough one.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
So what about you? Have you ever experienced depression?
No, I don't think so. No. No. Nope. Short answer. No, I mean, I get a bit down. The only time I've ever really been stressed and seriously, like, not worried from, but, like, seriously stressed is kind of financial-related stuff when, like, early on when I was setting up business and work was hard to come by and the bills were tricky to pay every now and again. That's the only time I've really been stressed. I mean, I have slight ups and downs, but kind of if I was drawing a picture of a wave, it would be quite a gentle up and down. Beth and my wife jokes about me that I'm never really that happy about anything either. But I'm never crazy. I never get really angry about stuff.
But that's that Buddhist thing about neither be happy nor sad, live in the middle.
Yeah, but I do worry, not worry, but then I worry what I'm missing out on in terms of real kind of euphoria. But then to get that euphoric feeling, would I have to suffer the real lows as well, or could I just get the peaks going like that?
Well, I always say I want woo. I want a bit of woo in my life, so I get some highs, but I accept the fact that there's a corresponding low.
Yeah.
You know, and I just see that as that waveform where we go up and down.
Is it possible to have those big highs without going below the line into the underneath the surface?
But it's relative, isn't it? If you had a middle band and you spiked up above that to a high hypermanic point, and then you come down to normal, that actually feels depressed. You know, actually you're in normal, but relative to the high,
you experience
it as a low.
Which is when I guess we're like drug addicts and that kind of behavior, they kind of keep trying to get up to that point, even though the low point for them is just kind of normality for everyone else. Everyday life,
but very often I know that in my own case, using substances as I did when I was young, that I was in depressive phases, as in I was below the band of normal in the black stuff, and taking the drug or whatever would lift me into the high. But the addictive cycle then is, we think of addiction as being a chemical, physical thing, but the greatest addiction is psychological. So that when you come back down and you feel that horrible downer as you're coming off, the easiest thing to do is hair of the dog. Let's go and do it again and get back up. That's where the addiction comes in hugely, which is a dopamine addiction.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I remember, actually, university, my first year, was a lowish point for me because I was quite lonely in that first year. The halls of residence I stayed in, it was great in the daytime because I'd be with pals on my course, mucking around, learning how to design stuff and playing on computers and all that. But then coming evening, it wasn't the type of halls of residence where there was a central point for people to meet before bed or whatever. It would just be like, you go to your room and that was it. You know, you wouldn't see anyone for 12 hours.
And
it was really horrible, actually.
Yeah.
That's probably a low point for me. So, loneliness.
But long did it take you to make connections with other people?
It didn't take me long at all, really. I had the connections there. It's just I was isolated for this half a day.
Mm.
I mean, three nights a week we'd go out. So we'd go out on Monday night, maybe, yeah. Always on a Monday night and a Saturday night, so I had those to look forward to. Mm. But the rest of the, every other night of the week, it was just kind of sat in my room. I could have gone out, you know, I could have gone and met other people or organised things, but I didn't, you know, because I can see how people can slip into that mode where it's just the low points of the normality.
I think that the key, when you start to look at the emotional, psychological side of depression, is when the meaning goes, and it's like, what's the point? And you can get that with social isolation. If you leave work where there are other people, so you've got some kind of social connectivity, and then you're going home to an empty house, and you're going to be on your own drumming your fingers all night till the next day when you go to work again, then going home can be a bit of a scary thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it might be easy to go to the supermarket and maybe spend a load of money doing things rather than actually going home.
Yeah, and a lot of people, yeah. You know, you see a lot of people look forward to going to work because it's that different type of social interaction is with people. Maybe you have family at home, but it's just seen as a bit of a drag and a bit of stress.
Whereas
you go to work and you just, everyone's bright and bubbly and everyone goes into work for the same reason, you know, just to kind of unload their feelings and just, I don't know, not worry about
People talk about work-life balance, especially in occupational health. So, like, if work is difficult and home's good, there's a balance. If home's difficult and work's good, there's a balance. But if they're both difficult, then it's a problem.
Yeah.
Because there's nowhere to hide.
There's nowhere to hide from. Run. Okay, yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. And that's when it becomes difficult. And sometimes the two things feed together, because if you're having a bad time at home, you can feed that through into the workplace and it starts to affect your work performance. But equally so, if things are difficult at work, that can feed into your home life and disturb your home life performance.
Yeah.
No.
I've got a question for you then. Based on a quote, actually, which is in one of the HuffPo article that I'll link to again about depression being good for you, possibly, saying how depression is a disease, it's an illness, and it's the modern-day version of leprosy, where revealing our affliction immediately condemns us to the metaphorical island of isolation. But then it goes on to explain how you can kind of take this depression and it can be a good thing. It talks about creativity and kind of reconnecting with the world and then experiencing the highs again eventually. The question is, do you think the world would be a worse place if depression was eradicated?
I think that's a bit like saying, would the world be a worse place if you took away rain? You know, it's like depression is an inevitability of being a human being because there's going to be ups and downs. Yeah. The issue is how far is down. And the second issue is when you go down, do we give people the coping tools to bring themselves back up again? And the only coping tools that we tend to use continually in the West is medication. And your quote was, or your question earlier on was, what would happen if 200-300 years ago, when there is no chemical,
people to rely on.
What did people do? Mm. You know, well, I guess people did chew coca leaves and drink alcohol and do other things. But generally, a lot of psychological problems are the product of the urbanised, industrialised, technologicalised world that we live in. When you go to many rural countries in, you know, China, Africa, it's the incidence of mental health problems is much, much lower. You know, almost to the point of being kind of non-existent. You might get the village idiot kind of idea.
There's no support for that village idiot generally, is there?
No.
But you're saying it's less, it happens less often as a percentage.
But if you live in a world where people don't really have much, there's no craving to have more. Because if you're not being bombarded with adverts telling you what you need and what you should have and ought to have and you must have and all that kind of stuff, people don't get that relative deprivation and feeling that they're hard done by and, oh, my God. And so one of the sadnesses for me, and some people can see this as an age issue, is I look at these people that are full of Botox and fillers and stuff like that. And very often, to me, they were quite pretty women and they've now deformed themselves, so they've got these odd lips and things.
Yeah.
And why would you do that to your body other than you were not happy with your body? And is it that if you didn't do that to your body, you would then be in what we would call depressed? You know, if everyone around you is doing it and you can't do it or you won't do it, does that make you different?
Mm.
Yeah? And depression, in that sense, can be like a relativity. Everyone in our street's got two cars and we've only got one. How bad is that?
Yeah, blimey.
You know, and no. So there is that side to it as well. And a lot of psychological anxieties and depressions, I believe, I'm owning this statement, are manufactured by the society that we live in and how we live in our society.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that in a world where you had a stable environment where the blacksmith's son becomes the blacksmith and everybody knows where they stand, the issues of have and have not and drive for things is different. It's not there.
Mm.
You know, in the same, the way that it is now.
Yeah, I mean, you see it on a national scale about in terms of, well, at the moment there's polarised opinion in the Western Hemisphere, really, where the States or the UK, you know, the Leavers, the Remainers, the Trumpers, the non-Trumpers or whatever.
Yeah.
Vast percentages of the populations are unhappy, you know, and it's just wall-to-wall news, isn't it? But, I mean, if you look back to, say, like, the 80s in Britain, 70s and 80s, I was only born then, but I know a bit of history. Like, generally, a lot of people in the 80s weren't too happy with old Maggie Thatcher.
Yeah.
But the kind of creative scene then and the bands and the music that came out of it in then, that kind of then, well, that grew up in that era and then in the 90s when kind of Cool Britannia hit, all of a sudden it's like, wow, look at all this energy and where's it come from? And you can trace it back to unhappiness and unrest.
Yeah.
You know, 10, 15 years ago?
I suppose the issue for us all is that if there's a deficit between where we are and the state we'd want to get to, then we have a drive to move forward, which I suppose at some level is evolution. I'm saying that agricultural societies where they don't have things, then they don't necessarily have the depressions and anxieties that we have in the industrialised world. But the kind of creativity, I mean, we now talk about iPhone 8 is coming out, and, you know, what's it going to be, what's it going to do? You know, and if you look at an iPhone 8 relative to the first iPhone that came out, the first iPhone now looks really kind of clunky and old and,
yeah.
and weird, because we're moving at that kind of pace. But if I'm stuck with an old clunky iPhone 1, if it would still work, I don't know if it still works, you know, am I going to feel bad because I haven't got an iPhone 8 or yeah. 7 or whatever?
You definitely would. You're an Apple addict.
Well, I like...
Or do you look at my Apple Watch and think, oh, I wish I had one of them?
No, I look at it sometimes and I think...
My batteries run out.
So, yeah, complete waste of time. So,
yeah. Oh, there we go. No, it does tell the time still. That's about it.
It does, yeah.
Okay.
So how often do you have to charge it?
Every 3 days, really, unless you're doing a lot of fitness tracking, in which case every couple of days.
Yeah. And do you feel... are you feeling depressed now that the battery's
gone? It's not tracking my steps anymore and it's not monitoring my heart rate. Oh, I'm living.
See, I've only got a Fitbit on, so does that mean I should feel bad?
But I can tell you... Black and white screen. Ugh.
I've done 7,245 steps
today. That's more than I would have done today. But I have cycled to and from work. So.
But the things that you can't tell me, because your watch has run out of power.
Yeah, you just have to take my word for it. It's probably did tracks. It's synced all to my phone. I can show you. I swear. But yeah.
But that's it, isn't it? It's like you and I can have this conversation over watches.
Mm.
You know, would one of us feel bad because we haven't got the best watch or the best pair of trainers or whatever?
Well, I've got your beat there as well. Look at these flash bad boys.
I don't know that wearing pink trainers. Or do we say a man that can wear pink trainers is in touch with his feminine side?
That's orange, man. That's orange.
No, it's definitely pink.
I swear, it does look a bit pink in this light.
It does. It doesn't look a bit pink. It is pink.
All right.
I don't know. I mean, I think that we always demonise depression as a bad thing. And what I'm saying is maybe a lot of depression is our opportunity to sort something out.
Yep.
But we have to get over the idea that we can go to the GP and get a chemical that's going to make it different. Maybe we need to do a bit of work and actually sort our lives out,
mm-hmm.
which is the mindful approach.
That's a good note to end on, I think.
Yeah.
Get to it, get to work, folks.
Yeah.
You got resource of the week?
Yeah. Mine is the manual, which is for mindful-based cognitive therapy. And it's all about depression.
Okay.
And it's how to use mindfulness in a different way. It's a bit of an expensive book. It's about £35, which might make you depressed. But it is the sort of seminal volume.
Lovely. Okay, cool. Yeah. I will check that out. That looks good. I've got a little video. Life lessons from 100-year-olds.
Oh, wow.
Sorry, it's on a channel called Life Hunters. But interestingly, there's an old guy from the Wirral on it.
Oh.
So have a look at it. I'll send you now. But I kind of thought recognised like the sea view, and I think it's Hoylake. When they kind of did introducing the guy, and then they went, "Yeah, his name's Harry from the."
And he's 100 years old.
He's a centenarian, or whatever you call it, centurion. Is it centurion? Is that right?
Centurion.
Yeah, and there's three of them that he focuses on, and they're just giving little tips on, you know, how they got through it all, and how they're still. They're actually a couple of them. In fact, all three of them. They're the type of 100-year-olds that you would have thought were maybe 80, 85. They've still got that spark and that snap, and they can talk lucidly about anything. It's just amazing, actually.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think you'll learn a thing or three
from
these guys.
Yeah.
And the fact that one's from the Wirral is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
I need to give a quick shout-out, actually. Did you see that article? It was on the Daily Mail, but it was research from elsewhere. Bebbington CH63 was the top place in
which is where you live
in the UK to live. Yeah,
wow.
Second year running CH63.
So how did they work that out?
It's to do with a number of things, to do with kind of green space nearby, schools, shortness of commute. Most people don't have that far to travel to work. Basically just local amenities, and you know, we're near
schools
to, we've got Liverpool and Manchester close, we've got North Wales on our doorstep as well, just kind of that perfect setup. So obviously I agreed with it entirely, but give it up. Bebbington CH63,
wow.
Best place in the UK. Usually those things don't go north of like the Cotswolds, do they? It's just like everything's in Surrey. But
I know that Heswell was in the top 10, especially lower Heswell, places to live.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
But no, part of it was also Bebbington, like house prices aren't crazy expensive.
Yeah, which they are in Heswell.
Parts of Heswell they are. Yeah. Yeah. Partly because there's loads of centurions sitting on all the property.
Centenarians,
there.
I think is the word.
Yeah, we won't get into that just yet.
I think a centurion was a Roman soldier, I think.
So I'll try and link to that as well. That's pretty cool. We've got a guest coming on next week, haven't we?
Yeah, we got Chris.
Chris talking about meditation.
Yeah.
And a special product as well that we may be introducing to our audience, but it's been a while since we did a meditation one, so that'd be cool. It's about time I got started with it, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, you need to use the product.
Yeah. I'm going to give it a go.
Yeah.
All will be revealed.
Yeah.
Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We're out there. We're doing things. Livingthepresent.co.uk is our website. It's chock full of amazing things, isn't it?
Yeah. All about you and me.
Don't be shy about dropping us an email as well. If there's anything you'd like us to talk about in the future, just send us an email and we'll schedule it in.
Yeah, and I'd be interested to know anyone's experience of depression, how they've dealt with it, if they feel that they've overcome it, how they overcame it, that kind of stuff.
Definitely.
Be very interesting.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. All right, cool. Sean, have a good week.
And you, take care.
See ya.
Bye.